Welcome to this special episode of The QR Code. I'm your host, Ramses Jha. Today's guest, Ami Horwitz, is an American conservative documentary filmmaker and activist. He is the writer, producer, and director of Ami on the Loose, a satirical short film series. He is also the host of the recent documentary, The Art of War, a look into the practices of the IDF. And he is our guest today. All right, Ami, welcome back to the show, man. How you been doing?
I've been doing great. Oh, love being back with you, man. Super excited for this.
Yeah, man. It's good to see you, man. You know, longtime listeners of our shows over here know that you're a frequent guest. But for folks just coming to the table, I need you to buckle up because Ami and I are going to have another one of our spirited conversations.
I like that.
Yeah. I'm finding the language. But yeah, Ami and I, we have different ideas of, you know, politics. We have different ideas of what works versus what doesn't work. And throughout this divisive time in our country's history, insofar as politics are concerned, I have committed to loving Ami, and I do. There's always a seat at my table for Ami. I care for him deeply, and he helps keep me this show, you know, even my friends through extension, grounded. I believe Ami to be a decent man, and therefore I cannot paint with too broad of a stroke because I do have a conservative friend who feels very differently about me, but I know that he's a decent human being. He is Ami Horwitz, and he's the guest on this show today. I needed you to know that because if you don't know that, it might sound like me and Ami don't think too highly of each other, and that is absolutely not the case. You know, I've cried with Ami. I've laughed with Ami. We've broken bread. I should ask how your mother is doing. So I check up on his family. How's your mom, by the way?
My mom is great. I told her I'm going on today. She wanted me to say hello. Oh,
good, good, good. And so today Ami is on to talk to us about a recent short film that he made. So I'm going to let you paint the picture here of the film, and then we'll get into the weeds.
Sure. So this little short film was about the disparity in how the white left views the black community. And as you know, that's kind of like a small cottage industry of mine that I do a number of these videos per year because I find this idea of white savior complex on the left in particular fascinating and frankly disturbing, and that the difference between how they view the world and how I have found the black community to view the world to be very, very different. Mm-hmm. So in this particular video, we talked about a very controversial topic that's, you know, people have been talking about now for the last couple of years with progressive prosecutors and DAs in blue cities, this idea of cashless bail and the judicial, and we, as an extension, the judicial system in general, right? The question that we've been grappling with for many years is the judicial system racist, right? Mm-hmm. In its core, structurally speaking. Mm-hmm. And I think you and I come from different perspectives on that. I think a lot of, hopefully this discussion will have each of us kind of moderate and move more toward the middle maybe, because you'll understand my perspective. I'll hear and get your perspective. And always, I think the truth lies somewhere in the middle with all things. I think the right wing and the left wing are, I think they're both wrong. I think they're both hyperbolic. I know you introed me as a conservative, and certainly I have conservative tendencies, but I consider myself to be a truth seeker, wherever that truth leads me. If that leads me to a counter argument, something that I didn't see the first time, I'm open to that. In fact, I want that. I'm here for that. Mm. Yeah, there's some things I skew center left, certain things center right. But I do tend to thread more toward, my baseline is more toward the middle. Okay. I think that's where most of the truth lies, to be honest.
Sure, sure. If I may, I'm going to try to paint a picture for our listeners, and I invite all of our listeners to check out the film, please, while we're here. And then at the end, I would like you to plug where people can go and check out this film and some of your other films.
Yes, they can go to either my YouTube channel, Ami Horowitz, or they can go to PragerU, which is their website. I know you're chuckling when I say that. We've had this discussion before. Yeah, it's an organization I've been involved for a long time. I think your view of them is a little off, but I get it. I get how you can feel the way you do.
Yeah. We're here to love each other, Ami. You're going to be my brother. That's what it's going to be. You're right. I'm not a big fan of PragerU. I think that they have a lot of harmful tendencies, but I recognize and respect the fact that for a conservative leaning mind and a person who tells themselves that they seek the truth, which indeed there are a lot of people who really feel that way, and people who can see biases that don't reflect their version of reality, PragerU is a soft place to land. And so without speaking badly about PragerU, you can go to PragerU and indeed Ami's YouTube channel and find these films. Now, what I want to do is tell you what I saw in the film, and I'd like for you to correct me if or fill in any gaps that I might have left out. So one of the things that happens a lot in terms of political satire is you tend to find more comedy, I think, with respect to progressives and on the left. You find more comedy. You find people that go out at Trump rallies and, you know, all these sorts of places, and they'll find people who cannot substantiate or provide any logical basis for their conservative beliefs. And, you know, these comedians will make fun of that. Indeed, there's a lot of conservatism that is just kind of funny to progressives that see kind of a better, brighter, more easy path toward a future where everyone has an equitable go at the American dream. And that has not always been true with the right. In terms of looking for comedians on the right making fun of liberals, there have been folks that have done it in the past and tried to do it, and it comes across as sort of mean, and it just doesn't really float the same way that it does on the left, where Ami has kind of found, you mentioned like a niche, you know, where you can point out sort of inconsistencies on the left in hypocrisies and things like this, right? Am I good so far?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, absolutely.
And you have a sort of a comedic, I don't want to make it seem like it's not silly. It's serious.
I think it's an undertone of comedy for sure.
That's
what I'm trying to say. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, I think I'm not trying to do gotcha. Like that's not my.
That's something you find more on the left, right?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm looking from the perspective of somebody like me. Mm-hmm. I think it's comedic because I think some of their views are absurd. But I'm not looking to frame it as, look, my point is I want people to hear what, and by the way, so we're clear, I am presenting the argument of not the left of center, like not a traditional Democrat, but more people on the progressive side, the leftist side of the Democratic Party.
Sure.
And no, I want people to understand. I think clarity, you know, Dennis Prager has always said he likes to have clarity over agreement. And I agree. I really think, look, agreement is great. But I think clarification of people's viewpoints is almost more important, mm-hmm. just to understand where people are coming from. And that's kind of the point of the videos.
Okay. I appreciate that. So in this most recent video that we're discussing today, and I invite you to go back and listen to some of Ami's other conversations that we've had here on the show. But this one is just the order of the day. He goes into, I guess, a community where, as you mentioned, there's a lot of, we'll call them affluent white folks, and you interview them. And you ask them questions like, hey, is the criminal justice system racist? How do you feel about cash bail? Is cash bail racist? These sorts of things. And you have these responses in this video of people saying, of course it's racist. And then they try their best to substantiate these claims. And then you go into a neighborhood where there are maybe less white people, more black people. And the way I remember it is you asked black people their opinions, same questions, and they almost had like the opposite opinion. You would ask a black person, is Bale racist? And then a black person would answer something like, how in the world could Bale be racist? You know what I mean? Like, don't commit the crimes and then you won't have to even worry about this. What's racist right. about it, right? And again, it's entertaining, Ami's style is meant to be, again, it's not gotcha journalism or anything like that, but it's meant to be entertaining while being informative at the same time. I'm assuming
that's exactly
that
what I'm going for. That bullseye. Okay,
there it is. Gotcha. So
now, again, you what, just only in a forum like this where we have 45 minutes an hour to do a deeper dive into it, can you give more context? Obviously, in 3 minutes, you know, there's only so much you can do in terms of contextualizing the argument. You're trying to do it with broader strokes, obviously. Mm-hmm. But this is why I love this, is now we have to get a deeper discussion on these kind of issues.
Sure. So, I agree. It's important to paint a fuller picture because, you know, I started off saying no matter what comes at the end of this conversation or at the end of the next 20 conversations, Ami Horowitz is going to be my brother. That's it. So it doesn't behoove me to paint you in a light that is unfair or unnecessarily unflattering. And so I try my best.
You never do.
I try. Because no matter what comes, if I don't think you're a good person, I think that you're a bad faith actor or something like that, then why in the world would I be friends with you? And if I can't keep my word, then I'm not a person that keeps my word. And that's not something I intend to do either. So I appreciate you allowing me to paint such a full picture. Now, let's get to it. In the film, which I suppose this conversation should be like supplementary material that you might want to check out. But I think we painted a fair enough picture. But in the film, I think your point is to, as you mentioned, your point is to, I guess, weed out the hypocrisies that you find in the progressive side of, you know, leftist politics. And you mentioned the word white savior complex. Now, I will, of course, as always, mount a defense of these people. I think it starts right here. So, you know, in the film, when you go to a neighborhood like the affluent neighborhood, I don't know the name of it, please.
The East Village.
East Village, okay.
Which is a particularly progressive neighborhood. Like Manhattan is generally obviously very pretty progressive.
Okay.
But the East Village, for example, or like Williamsburg, there are certain neighborhoods which are particularly progressive. And by the way, I that's why I say the name of the neighborhood mm-hmm. in the video, because I want people to know I'm self-selecting mm-hmm. a particular subset of the left.
Oh yeah, you're very transparent. I won't take that from you. Now. On this show, we like to think that we empower allies and potential allies. That is the basis of the show. That's why we built the show. That's why we pursued the affiliates, the syndication network, etc. To get information to people that otherwise wouldn't have it. And so we're literally writing the book on allyship right now. And how that looks and how people can remain, you know, fortified. And one of the things that we run up against is indeed white savior complex, because there are some people that jump out in front of issues and want all the credit and want all the shine and want all the limelight. And they think that they know best and they're well-intentioned, but they will, I think, naturally, based on kind of how they've been raised in the world, how the world has shown up for them, they naturally will assume that they know better than, you know, 45 million people, or let's call it 40, because you can't get all 45 million on the same page. You know, I wouldn't suggest that, but 40 million people, and they're the one that knows better than all this group, even though they haven't walked a day in their shoes, right? So this is the white savior complex as we understand it. And that is something that I feel is decidedly different from people who have had the bandwidth and have sought the understanding of how the criminal justice system, indeed the entirety of the carceral system, could be biased. I know the word racist turns people off, but we'll say biased for now. Okay. The word racist will come up, so just prepare yourselves. But these people perhaps have had that bandwidth and been able to do these deep dives. People have been able to, you know, whatever. And I would suspect that you would find that more frequently in affluent neighborhoods, neighborhoods where progressive policies tend to fly, and less so in neighborhoods where people perhaps are overwhelmed with this, that, or the other, which is, as I understand it, the tendencies in poorer neighborhoods, which tend to skew browner skinned. So your thoughts there?
Yeah, no, I agree. You ever hear of the concept luxury beliefs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's exactly what that is. It's luxury beliefs. And I think that in neighborhoods who are less affluent, in more urban neighborhoods, Black, Hispanic neighborhoods, I think they look at it and say, look, life gets in the way, right? I gotta deal with things that you don't necessarily have to deal with, right? You've got more discretionary income, you make more money, you've got a little more leeway and wiggle room to focus on these issues, and we less so. And I think it's interesting because also the particularly when it comes to issues around crime, those are more acute issues for people in inner city neighborhoods, right? Because they're on the tip of the sword when it comes to that. They're the first person who have to deal with higher crime rates. Less so, I mean, not zero, obviously. If crime goes up in a city, it goes up generally everywhere. But clearly, it's a more acute issue in the Bronx, in Harlem, than it is in the East Village or Tribeca. Mm-hmm. So I think that oftentimes when you deal with issues on crime, I've done a number of these videos where I discuss, you know, defund the police, for example, and this the same structure of video, and I go to a Black neighborhood and they go, we don't want that. We're the ones who have, there's more, we have more issues, we deal more issues here than you do in those white neighborhoods. And therefore, we have a slightly different perspective on it. And by the way, it's a more nuanced perspective, right? It's not like they're saying there's no racial bias whatsoever in our world. Obviously, they accept that and understand that. That's, of course, there is. But they understand also the flip side of that is, hey, but we also want to be safer. We also want to have less crime. Mm-hmm. We want to have the ability to live our lives like anybody else. So I think they tend to have different perspectives than those luxury beliefs of the progressive white in these cities.
Mm-hmm. Now the films, when you do have, you know, I guess the dividing line is between white and Black, and not all of your films are follow that divide.
No.
But when you do have these films, you're absolutely right. There are a number of Black people, and I don't imagine, you know, I don't know what your editing process is, but I want to just say how I feel. I don't imagine that you go out of your way to select people to give you the outcomes that you want. These are probably honest interactions on the streets. And when it doesn't fit your narrative, those go up just the same. So I would imagine that's true. And you're affirming that right now.
And by the way, I've had videos where I came in with one perspective, and my perspective was totally flipped because that was not what I got. And the videos go up. And by the way, those videos tend, I think, to be better videos than the ones where my confirmation bias is confirmed, you know?
Sure. So here's the thing that I would like to offer that. So now you and I are having a conversation. My understanding of what life is like in the inner city. I've been Black for all of my life. I was born in Compton, California. Until I became an adult, I never lived in a good neighborhood, what would be considered a good neighborhood. I was surrounded by gangs and all the crime and criminality, all that sort of stuff. And because of some fortunate circumstances, I ended up on a path that allowed me to not only have that perspective, but to see kind of the holes and to see sort of the chinks in the armor, if you will. So my understanding is that when it comes to things like police, it's complicated, as you mentioned. I want to get to the prison industrial complex and cash bail and all that sort of stuff, but this is a great place to start. When it comes to police, when you're in a neighborhood where everybody is poor, and people are fighting each other to survive. Rarely do people thrive in environments like that. but really survive. And you never know what a person's dealing with. You know, a person, their mother could be sick and out of medicine, and that will push a person to a life, whole life, where they're doing stuff, and then they end up being the bad guys when the truth is that wasn't their heart, that was their circumstances, right? These are people I know, things I've seen. But though they're bad guys nonetheless, they do the bad things, the things that you and I would consider to be crime. The only way to pacify, to deal with that for the rest of the people in those communities, the only thing that they see as being a line of defense, it's realistic, is either an opposing gang or like community policing or whatever, which, you know, to be fair, as you mentioned, that's a luxury for people that have time, bandwidth, space, not working two jobs, raising kids, all that sort of stuff, or the traditional police. And so when you imagine what life might be like without police, or with police being defunded, because that's an alarming thing to say to a person that cannot conceive of it, the next step. Why would you take money away from the police? It sounds like no police, right? You're very likely to get some pushback because, hey, this is the only thing keeping these people from breaking into my house. I don't even have much. If they took what I have, then I have nothing. And I have responsibilities. I'm a Homo sapiens sapien. My drive to live based on the nervous system that we all share, even plants and animals, is very strong, and I want to live, right? If you take away the police, then I'm vulnerable. I can't fight back. And things like defunding the police, and really what a larger push, the people, the intellectuals that have been able to kind of use their luxury in terms of time and finances and whatever to do deep dives, that have been able to get into the studies and the data and the research that says, hey, look, Head Start programs prevent crime. Better infrastructure reduces crime. More job opportunities reduce crime. Nobody is born in the ghetto and says, you know what I want to be when I grow up? A drug dealer and a gangbanger. Nobody says that. People want to be little kids. They want to be basketball players and doctors and firemen and all that sort of stuff. Life gets in the way, as you mentioned. So rather than dealing with, okay, let's put resources in these communities that will actually impact crime, that will prevent the necessity of crime, and have it marketed that way, it comes across as defund the police. And then people push back against that because they cannot conceive of the other reality. Now, defunding the police is an idea that never, in my estimation, never fully got its day in the sun. But I think that because of the There's this sort of duality I find in conservative circles where they will say things like, you know, for instance, Chicago comes up quite a bit. Look at Chicago. Why not focus on what's going on in Chicago? Why not focus on black on black crime? Right. I may have shared this with you before. We've said this before on the show. Ami is a Jewish man. I learned a story when I might have been in like the fourth grade. It was a heartbreaking story, and I carry it with me, and I'll carry it with me until my last day. I was told in the Holocaust, during the Holocaust, that the German soldiers would sometimes put Jewish people in a train car where they couldn't like climb out, and they were very hungry, and they would throw a bread in the train car, and then the Jewish people would fight each other, and they would kill each other because they were hungry. And I never liked that story. And I think it's an awful thing for any human being to have to endure. But one of the things that it showed me was there is no such thing as Jewish on Jewish crime. There's only circumstances that will lead to that. This is my understanding. I recognize that your understanding might be different. You might believe in the idea of black on black crime. And you might think that the people that you've interviewed that have discussed at length their opposition to defunding the police is a reality that black people want to stay in, and that it is the white liberals pushing a narrative of defunding the police onto them that is not realistic and is not desired by that community. Now, I want you to reflect on all of it, take as much time as you want, but that's, I think, a good starting point for this conversation.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think I do agree with that. But look, you know, this idea of black on black crime is most crime, particularly most violent crime, is always within a race, right? Because that's people tend to group with each other. So is most of the crime committed by a black person, black on black crime? Yes.
Yes.
Is most crime committed by white people committed against other white people?
Yes.
Yes. So black on black crime is sometimes used as pejorative, and I don't like that. Nor do I want that to be the case. I think that what's interesting is you made a point that some of the things, like I said, look, I go where truth takes me. I'm a truth seeker. And, you know, when you bring up the idea of, you know, the left is brought up more than the right. The right tends to, and they're not necessarily incorrect about this general, painting of a general brush. The right focuses more on what do we do after the crime, right? Like sentencing, things like that. And that the left tends to focus more on, well, how do we solve the problem before we get to the crime being committed itself, right? How do we work with the community? And by the way, I think they're both true.
Sure.
And I think where the right fails is that you're right. I think we should focus more on a lot of the issues that you talked about, the issues within the community themselves. And how do we solve those problems before we get to criminality, before we get to higher crime? And you mentioned a bunch of things about how you helped to solve those. I think I would add to those things that you talked about, which are all true, is also education is a key to, you know, education is always a lifeline to anyone succeed. White, black, poor, rich, education is always the key. Certainly Jewish people have focused on education. I think it's a not small part of why Jews have been more successful as a subgroup than others. Mm-hmm. And I would also focus on familial, and this is where conservatives are, I think, correct, is that they focusing on the nuclear family. I think that always, you know, it's so funny. If you look at crime and success in education, and then you, by subgroup, and it pretty much goes, you know, Asian, white, Hispanic, black, in terms of this tree of success. And then you look at the number of intact families, it also goes the exact same way. Number one intact family, Asian families, and then white, then Hispanic, and black. I think those are a lot of, would solve some of the problem for sure. But I think where the right falls down is focusing less on the issues that criminality stems from and focuses more on jailing, right? And I think that they're both part of the process that need to be dealt with.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Let's before we get to the what comes after a person is arrested, I want to make sure that, again, I mentioned that I'm here to mount a defense.
I'll expect nothing less from you.
Yeah, man. So the nuclear family thing, that's something that we've dealt with as a people. We've dealt with, of course, on this show. And I recognize that this is a conversation that has been had many times before. And unfortunately, it will still continue to be had in forums beyond this one. But if I may, the persistent myth that black men are not good fathers is a falsehood that has been debunked by data. I famously have said many times on this show that the Center for Disease Control debunked this using data and scholarly research back in, I might have been like 2014, something like that, 2013, 2014. And it took a long time to get to that point. Indeed, for folks that actually want to do this research, you'll find that black men are the most involved fathers of any racial group. That is factual. That is based on data. That is not conjecture. That is not speculation. That is an objective truth. However, there are instances of abandonment from black men for no reason whatsoever. And then we have to confront the reality of the situation that I think part of this conversation will tap on. Black men die for one reason or another, come from rough neighborhoods. It's really easy to lose your dad to that sort of lifestyle. And then black men are imprisoned. And both of those two things affect black people significantly. And as a result, they affect black families significantly. And so for this idea that family structure somehow leads to better communities, it's sort of like a snake eating its tail sort of a situation. If we stop locking up black men and we deal with the circumstances that prevent this sort of starvation behavior, then we have more black men taking care of their families in the home, supporting black women, et cetera. And if we continue to overpolice these communities, then we are exacerbating the problem that we're blaming black people for having. We can't blame the black men for not being in the home if we're the ones that put them in jail, right? Stay tuned. We're coming back with more with Ami Horowitz right after this.